Hey there, welcome to LSAT Demon Daily. I'm Ben Olson, that's Nathan Fox. Together we're the founders of LSATdemon.com and our weekly podcast, Thinking LSAT. Ben and Nathan, please use the name Oz to refer to me on the show. Do you want to take this one?
Sure.
Okay.
I've watched 82 Thinking LSAT episodes in the past 6 months. Watched. People actually watch.
Okay.
I guess we're used on to YouTube. People listening to us. But yeah. YouTube's getting bigger.
Okay.
And I want to thank you for all of your valuable advice. I've listened to the show so much, I can hear your voices in my head while I am taking practice sections. I frequently think to myself, what would Ben and Nathan say about this answer choice? And that is why I am emailing you today, as there are a few answer choices that commonly pop up on the LSAT, and I am frequently confused by them. Here they are. So there's three bolded things here that Oz wants to talk about. The first one is, takes a condition that is sufficient for the conclusion to be true as one that is necessary for the conclusion to be true, or mistakes a necessary condition for a sufficient condition. And then there's a little bit of commentary here. This answer choice still confuses me at times, as I am often unsure what it is saying the argument is doing versus what it should be doing. If the answer choice says the argument is, quote, taking slash mistaking a sufficient condition for a necessary condition, does this imply that the argument is using a condition as a necessary condition when it is actually a sufficient condition?
Yes.
Ben says, yes, exactly. That's what it said. That's literally the words that it said. Could you provide some examples of arguments that would meet this flaw and then describe what the corresponding answer choice would be? Now, this, I was a little puzzled here, actually, that Oz was asking this question.
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of like LSAT 101, which, well, I mean, I guess that's good because it's a big opportunity for you, Oz. Like, you should really understand the sufficient necessary flaw backward and forward. I think the easiest way to do that is to have one simple example in your head of the sufficient and necessary flaw. Ben, you want to provide Oz with one simple example of the sufficient necessary flaw? Usually I start by asking people where they live.
Yeah. So I think what we should do here is we should start with the simple example. We could use yours. And then what I like to do is I like to give an example that tends to go against people's intuitions. They tend to make this flaw when they hear this argument. And then point out why that's flawed.
We need to understand the simple example first, because the second we take it into the realm of the abstract, then people are going to be like, what? That doesn't commonsensically make any sense. And that's because they're rejecting the arbitrary rule that we gave them.
Well, hold up. I'm actually not going to give like an abstract example. I'm going to give a concrete example that people tend to get wrong when they just hear it and don't think for a half second, but intuitively they can actually understand why it's wrong after we go through it. So let's start with yours and then we'll...
Well, what I would normally do is I would say, hey, Ben, you have to play Oz, okay?
Okay, sure.
Oz, Hi. Where do you live?
I live in Chicago.
Okay, Chicago's in Illinois, right?
Yep.
Okay, so it's a fact that anyone who's in Chicago is in Illinois.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
So from that, we can clearly conclude that anyone who's in Illinois must be in Chicago.
No.
What?
No, not necessarily. You could be in some other part of Illinois.
Struggling to name some other place in Illinois.
Some other location?
I was like, Des Moines? Wait, no, that's Iowa. Okay. Everybody understands, and it's really just common sense. If you're in Chicago, then you're in Illinois. That's our rule. But that does not mean that anybody in Illinois has to be in Chicago, because Illinois is a big state and there are many other places outside Chicago that you could be in.
Yeah. So let me put this in LSAT terms, right? So if you're in Chicago, then we necessarily know that you're in Illinois. In other words, being in Illinois is a necessary condition for being in Chicago.
It's important for people to understand the practical application of these words, right? So when we say sufficient means enough.
Yep.
Enough what? Well, it's basically enough information. Okay, so the rule, if you're in Chicago, then you must be in Chicago. Sorry, if you're in Chicago, you must be in Illinois. Chicago is sufficient information, enough information,
yep,
to prove that someone is in Illinois.
Exactly.
Another way of saying that is, if you're in Chicago, it is necessary that you also be in Illinois. And necessary has a very practical definition. Everybody knows what that means. But sufficient, sometimes people don't understand that it just means enough.
Exactly.
Right. So Chicago is sufficient to prove that someone is in Illinois. But if someone is in Illinois, then we don't really know where they are. They could be in Chicago, but they definitely don't have to be in Chicago. So if I were to say, oh, well, Bill's in Illinois, therefore Bill's in Chicago, I would be making the mistake of confusing sufficient for necessary.
Yep.
And it's not important to think about what's the sufficient and what's the necessary there. It's just you fucked it up. Like, you fucked up a conditional rule.
True. Although, to help, I don't know, to help people understand why or how the LSAT is using these terms, which can, I think, really turn people off, we just pointed out that being in Chicago is the sufficient condition. Right? That's what the LSAT would call the sufficient condition.
It's the trigger on a rule. That's another way to think about it. It's the piece of information that, if known, will cause another piece of information to be known.
Yep. And being in Illinois is a necessary condition for that. But if you then hear that and wrongly say, oh, well, therefore, if you're in Illinois, then you're in Chicago, you've just treated what is in fact a necessary condition as if it were a sufficient condition. You treated being in Illinois, which is necessary for people who are in Chicago, as if it were sufficient to guarantee that they are in Chicago. So
yeah, and all you did is you just like basically flipped
them. Yep.
So that's the flaw. And like, you can pick your home city and your home state, and you can just think about that example and how stupid it would be to say, oh, someone's in my state, therefore they have to be in my city.
Yep.
And that's your simple example of confusing sufficient for necessary. And that's ultimately, that's all there is to it.
Yep.
Okay. Now you want to go with your, maybe more counterintuitive example?
Sure, we can do a counterintuitive example and then leave it at that. Maybe just to hit this home a little bit more. So the one that comes to my mind a lot in class, I'll say something like, hey, if we don't get the software update, right? If we don't get the software update, we're not going to finish the project on time, right? People are like, okay, if I don't get the software update, we're not going to finish the project on time. That makes sense. And then I say, hey, good news. We got the project update. Or we got the software update. And people's gut reaction to that is like, oh, okay. I'll ask in class. I'll say, hey, so what do we know now? And
oh, we finished it.
Yep. Oh, we got it. We can finish the project on time. And it's like, no, not necessarily. We know that if we didn't get the update, we wouldn't be able to finish on time. But we never talked about what would happen if we got it. If we got it, there might be other problems that could get in the way. So I think people can understand why getting the update does not guarantee that you will finish it on time. But they have an intuitive tendency to think that they will. But intuitively, you can also understand why that's not necessarily true. And you've just done the same thing. You've confused something that's sufficient for necessary.
Yeah. Another way of getting at that idea is that there could be infinite necessary conditions. So in order to finish the project on time, we mm-hmm. must get this update.
Yep.
But that doesn't negate some other, there might be, in order to finish the project on time, our workers have to show up tomorrow.
Yep.
There can't be World War III tonight.
Yep.
There can't be 10 feet of snow. Stopping all, you know, our internet can't go out.
Yeah.
Our building can't burn down. Like there's infinite, always infinite necessary conditions. And so, yeah, proving the necessary condition doesn't do anything to prove the sufficient condition.
Yep.
All right. Should we do the next one?
Yep.
Okay, so that's one. Hopefully that was helpful, Oz. Write us back, daily@lsatdemon.com, if you want more clarification on that. So the second thing that has been confusing Oz, what about an answer that says, relies on an assumption that is tantamount to assuming the conclusion is true? And Oz wants an example of that.
Relies on an assumption that is tantamount to assuming the conclusion is true. All this is saying is that the person who made the argument, the author, is assuming what they're trying to prove. They're trying to prove, I don't know, that apples are bad for you. And then they made that assumption as they were going through their argument. It's hard for me to think of an example, and I don't feel like this flaw happens very often. But when it happens...
More commonly a wrong answer than a right answer. But the right... When it is the right answer, and there are a few of these on the test, you know, when you go through 100 practice tests, there are a few of these. It's going to be... The argument is going to, like, plainly not have any evidence for its own conclusion. It's going to just, like, restate the conclusion over and over. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm going to make America great again because I'm the guy who makes America great.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's like, what? Like, all you're really doing is saying your conclusion over and over and over. Every word in the Bible is true because it says in the Bible that every word in the Bible is true.
Well, so what you're describing there to me sounds a little bit like the circular reasoning, right? And this particular flaw is almost like the argument itself didn't say it but assumed it. I feel like I have seen this, but I can't think of an exact example of this.
Okay, maybe I'm wrong, but to me it just sounds like circular reasoning. I don't... Yeah. Relying on an assumption that is tantamount to assuming the conclusion is true. Yeah. If you're assuming your own conclusion, that's circular reasoning. I don't know. You know, I mean, and one thing I would say to Oz is, don't pick that answer unless you know they did it.
Yeah. Well, that's true for so many flaw answer choices, right? It's like, is this describing something I just saw? If you can't identify the assumption that they're making that is the same as the conclusion, then that's not the answer. End of story.
You know, I think if you make a conclusion but you present no evidence for that conclusion, I think you could say that you have relied on an assumption that is tantamount to assuming the conclusion is true.
Yeah.
Like, you'd have to agree that this, you know, you basically haven't provided any evidence in support of your conclusion. You're just assuming your own conclusion.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, I'm not sure that was helpful. It's very rare, you know, don't pick answers you don't understand. So, like, you should be able to see, if that's the correct answer, then you're going to see, oh, I see. Yeah, they really didn't have any evidence. They said some bullshit, but it wasn't evidence in support of the conclusion. And then basically all they did was just, like, assumed that their own conclusion was true.
Yeah. The only time you pick an answer that you don't understand is when you understand the other four and you completely understand that they're wrong.
Right.
But in all their cases, a lot of times we're not trying to really unpack or explain the wrong answers. We're like, just, no, I can't see that. I'm out.
Yeah. Okay. Last one. Oz wants help with match the reasoning, match the flaw, or use a principle to justify questions.
Okay, we got two different question types here.
Three, really?
Well, three. I kind of merge match the reasoning, match the flaw, but I mean, they're...
Yeah. So the specific question, I mean, I don't even know what use a principle to justify. That's not a question type that we talk about at the Demon. So
no, I'm just thinking strengthen. That's all I hear right there.
When sounds like strengthen or even maybe sufficient assumption. Maybe, but I don't really know what you're asking. Anyway, for stimuli, we don't say stimuli here, Oz. We say passages or arguments.
Yep.
So for arguments with conditional statements, does the answer choice have to be the same relationship or could it be the contrapositive? Oh boy, Oz has been studying somewhere else. I don't know why I think she, but Oz has been reading books that have made it more complicated than it needs to be.
Yeah, way, way more complicated.
For example, if a passage says someone should only do Y if X, Are we looking for exactly if X, then Y in the answer choices? Or can we have if not Y, then not X in the answer choice? It depends.
It really depends on what the question. I mean, a strengthening question versus a matching or parallel question.
Let's ignore the strengthen part. Let's just talk about matching, because, I mean, we know for sure that Oz is asking about matching questions. Leave the use a principle to justify part out of it, because I don't even know what that question is referring to. But matching pattern questions or matching flaw questions, it sucks because sometimes, yeah, the contrapositive can totally be the right answer if that's the one that matches the best.
Yes. It's about the argument that is the most parallel.
We're looking for the one that's the most parallel. And if X, then Y does logically mean the exact same thing as if not Y, then not X. The contrapositive is just another way of looking at the exact same statement. So they don't have any logical effect that's different from one another because one implies the other. They mean the exact same thing. It's just you've actually repeated yourself. If you say if X, then Y, and then you say if not Y, then not X, all you've done is repeat yourself. You've said the same thing, but in a different way. And so that can absolutely be the correct answer on a matching pattern question. But if there was another answer choice that said, you know, if A, then B, and it didn't say if not B, then not A, in that case, you would have to pick the one that is a closer match.
Assuming that everything else about that answer is the same or better. Yeah. But it might not be. That's how they sometimes get people. They're like, they give it some glaring problem elsewhere, but people miss that.
Yeah. The answer is, and the answer is almost always, it depends. We have to look at the exact specific question, and then we have to just, like, you know, there's going to be three answers for sure that are, like, not close. And then if you narrow it down to two, then this is the time when you might be thinking about that type of thing. But it could very likely be that there are four answers that are not close. And the one correct answer, if it uses the contrapositive instead of the direct statement, it uses the contrapositive of that same statement. If you can eliminate the other four, then yeah, that totally could be right.
Yep.
Thanks again for all the great episodes. I look forward to hearing your response. Best, Oz. Anything else
on that? Thank you. Nope. Thanks for writing in, Oz. Email daily@lsatdemon.com if you'd like to ask us a question or share some LSAT or law school admissions news. Thanks for listening.